The Zone with Jason Anderson.
That was the winning margin.
And it turned out to be the, whether it was the
That's not how the math works. And Jason, that was not the margin. What are we talking about?
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, Matt Derrick's hanging out with us here for the hour on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Josh Briscoe, Beards. We head up until 2 o'clock. Matt, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm hungry.
Well, you got the 23rd Street Brewery.
I'm hungry.
Oh, yeah. Let me walk you straight to the break room. We just polished off some breakfast casserole during the break.
Ooh.
It's not a ton left, but
if I'd known this, I would have been a vapor trail already.
I can stall if you would like to go eat. You know, believe me.
I may be thinking of breakfast casserole now, but
I can filibuster. I don't know if you know this about me, but I can figure out a way to fill some time.
I think the Chiefs will beat the breakfast casserole this week.
The Indianapolis casserole.
The Indianapolis casserole. They will have them for breakfast. The Colts casserole coming up this weekend. You know, we started the show kind of talking about different storylines coming up this weekend for college and the NFL. And the Chiefs-Colts, to me, one of the more fascinating things is so many aspects of this game say the Chiefs should win by double digits. Like, they're the better team. They're the better coach team. They've got the better quarterback. They've got the better offensive line. And yet the line is moving. Well, it went from 3.5 up to, like, what, 7 in like a few hours on Sunday? And it has now come back to 5.5. And those in Vegas, the prognosticators, the handicappers, are picking the Colts plus the points. And Lee Sterling, same thing. Colts plus the points. Fat Jack yesterday, Colts plus the points. Many different handicappers in Vegas, Colts plus the points. It's sort of the, and I don't want to call it a disconnect, it's those that have done this their lives for a living versus fans and people just randomly putting money on stuff, but you know, the majority, like 90% of the money, is coming in on the Chiefs, but the bigger sharp money is coming in on the Colts plus the points. It's weird. It's the betting aspect, but as far as the game goes, it's a game that I feel like the Chiefs should control.
That's my deep sigh for radio.
Yeah,
so
you
I'm sure people really appreciate that.
That is a Matt Derrick deep sigh.
That was a deep
I'm
sigh.
I'm not sure I'm on board with that. There's a concern about how he thinks this game will play.
Oh, I have concerns.
Okay.
I mean, and when I give my prediction later, you're going to be like, well, Matt doesn't clearly have that many concerns. But
this
I
is a
do.
Scary game. 50-7 Chiefs.
Because it's not quite that bad.
Okay.
But, I mean, are the Colts who they look like on paper so far through this season? No, I don't think so. I mean, and certainly two games is too small of a sample size to draw too many conclusions.
Take a drink.
And there's a lot. There you go. We get our bingo and everything going here. But this is, I mean, are the Colts a 2-15 team? No, they're not. Are they a playoff caliber team? But I think they have shown that they've got that kind of talent. And I'll still say this. As Eric Bieniemy would say, so drink. 2 through 53 on the roster, I think they're one of the better teams in the NFL. It's just the one spot is the one that has been giving them some problems so far this season. They have had injuries. They've got plenty of issues. They haven't figured it out yet. You don't want to be playing the Colts the week they figure it out. And I feel like that they're in danger of doing that at any moment. I mean, like I said, I think this is 500 becomes into play because of their start. And you look at it, and they blew a couple of really easy games up front. But you cannot take this team lightly, especially if they start getting healthy and Matt Ryan starts figuring it out.
So it's interesting. They're 0-1-1, and they're lucky to be 0-1-1 and not 0-2. I mean, they were down 20-3 against the Texans in the fourth quarter, and somehow they rallied to tie that game and go into overtime and then couldn't find a way to put 3 points on the board, even in overtime. And then against the Jags, they were just lost. I mean, they were just a bad football team. And the Jags were in the backfield you know, most of that game, and the offensive line is rough for this this Colts team. I'm with you in terms of, you know, the talent that's there and how good the roster is, and they were picked by a lot of people to win that division, myself included. I picked the Colts to win that division. Preseason, I picked the Chiefs to win this game, but I didn't think it would be building up to 2-0 versus 0-1-1 in a Colts team. In the two games they have played, in the first three quarters of those games, they have scored a total of 3 points. I mean, they have a field goal in that. With Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman, who's good, and Matt Ryan, who we've been told is not Carson Wentz, but that guy looks washed on washed. I don't know the advantages that the Colts have here, except for I always loved, you know, Kevin Harlan used to talk about, and still talks about, I shouldn't say used to, but still talks about, when he's looking at NFL games, like who's going to win, who's not going to win as he gets ready for a game, he always said, find me the most desperate team on the field, and that's who I like in that game. And I said at the beginning of the show, there is one team that is clearly more desperate of this is the game where we've got to figure it out now, or our whole season and offseason and hopes and work is you know, could be gone and just down the drain. There is one side, there's one sideline that will be uber desperate in this one.
And this is not your typical 0-2 or 0-1-1 team. I mean, like I said, I mean, you could, if you normally look at this and say an 0-2 team, okay, well, that's a team on its way to a 2-15 season. It's on its way to a debacle of some sort. No, this is a team that should be competing for a playoff spot. I mean, look at the South. I mean, they'll probably be, they could be back in it in a couple of weeks in that division right now, the way things are looking. But
is the South the new NFC East?
Could be this year for sure. But
the NFC East does a pretty good argument as being the NFC East.
Of its own.
We've got
the Eagles are going to dominate this year.
I'm talking about the NFC East that was what, like 7-9.
We had a 7-9. There was a 7-9 NFC West.
NFC West had that one year.
Those Seahawks, Marshawn Lynch was grabbing his crotch all the way to the playoffs on that team. Yeah.
That's right.
Won the division.
Was that the Beastquake?
Yeah, I think it was. That's what I remember that being. I think they won one game.
They
right?
won at home because they won the division. Yeah. They had a terrible record. They played the Saints, who were a wild card team, and at home they had Beastquake, and they ended up
Marshawn
winning that
Lynch
game.
Jumped backwards in the end zone.
I think they had to win that to make sure a 6-10 team didn't win the division.
Yeah, and so they finished the season, even making the playoffs, at 8-10. That year, did the Seahawks. But anyway, it's a bad division, and who knows what happens in that division. But the Colts are maybe the most talented team in the division. But you know,
and they played last week like a team that was missing its best defensive player and a couple of wide receivers, and went into that game in Jacksonville. Oh, good grief, I can't even imagine having to play a game in Jacksonville where you already know you're probably not going to win because you just have too many things tied behind your back,
and you can't win there anyway.
Or you go in there unmanned, and you think that's still Jacksonville. We can throw our helmets on the field and win this thing, and then you get down immediately, and are like, let's just get home next week and start over. You look at it across the board. It's a too talented team, it's a too well coached team. It's got too many elements for it to be this bad. So they're not going to be this bad. It's just, when are they going to figure it out? And like I said, you do not want to be playing them when they figure it out.
So can I push back on that?
Push them.
Feel free.
Take the logo. Take that horseshoe on the helmet, okay? And just peel that off for me. Now they're just a team with just a white shell helmet and the blue stripe down the middle, and they have gone out and had a disgusting tie with the Houston Texans, and then looked literally completely outclassed by the Jags. At one point, believed that they were well coached. At one point, I believed that Frank Reich was a good coach. The last one season and two games so far have given me relatively few examples of that being the case. I don't think that they're going to have the third overall pick in the draft or anything. I do think there's something to them getting healthy and not wanting to be playing them when they do get their stuff figured out. But I if I was a Colts fan right now trying to talk myself into this team, I don't even know where I would start.
I am going to now push back and knock you over.
Oh, God. Uh-oh.
Whoa.
I'm going to brace myself up against the wall.
Like I said, 2-53, they're one of the best teams in the league. They had Carson Wentz as their quarterback last year. Of course they didn't look like a good
team. Who's had a better start to this year than their current quarterback?
Well,
I'm braced against the wall.
That's because Matt Ryan is, what, 39 and currently looks 65. So that's part of the problem. And
I'm not beefing with total quality of the roster. I just don't know that the final product is anything that I'm terribly concerned with.
And I don't know how
and
well.
Once again, that's what I say.
I don't know how well of a coach team
you don't
want
to be playing them when they figure it out.
But I don't know how well of a coach team they are either, just because, I mean, this was a team that had to win against a bad team last year to make the playoffs, and they didn't, and they blamed it on Carson Wentz. And now they start this year, and they're 0-1-1 against the Texans and the Jags. That ain't on Carson Wentz. Like, Carson Wentz was an easy scapegoat. That was a Colts team that needed to make the playoffs last year, and they didn't. So if the Chargers don't make the playoffs, and we clown Brandon Staley for that, I don't know that I can turn around and say, well, Frank Reich is a good coach, and that's a well-coached team, because I don't know that it is. A well-coached team, they would have found a way to make the playoffs last year and just win against a bad team, or not start off essentially 0-2, but 0-1-1.
All of the things that you are bringing up now and talking about the Colts and everything is actually more and more convincing. I may need to go bet the Colts on this one, because if what you're saying is what the Chiefs are thinking, Chiefs are going to get beat.
Well, I don't
and,
think the Chiefs
are not
going to
look
that.
Good this week.
I don't think the Chiefs are thinking
I don't
that.
Think they are either.
Like,
I think
it's
they
one
respect
thing.
This team more than you guys do, and
well,
they
yeah,
should.
But, and that's fine. I didn't respect the Houston Texans in the divisional round. And I heard that a lot in the first quarter about how dumb I was, and this is why the Chiefs approached this game like you did, and they didn't. Like, I heard a lot of people that were taking their frustrations and projecting on me, because all week long I'm like, this Texans team doesn't have anything for the Chiefs. They're not nearly as good. And I don't think the Chiefs approached it that way. They just had some things that didn't go their way, and then we saw that those teams weren't close. That the Chiefs were the much more dominant team. And just because they started slow, I don't think they did not take them seriously. I think this Chiefs team goes in week by week and is not like, this Colts team isn't all that good. We'll just, you know, throw our helmets out there and win the game. I think they're too good. They're too experienced, and they've been there enough, and the culture is too well established. And the guy at the top in terms of roster, number 15, I don't think really would let that happen. So I don't think the Chiefs are approaching it like, you know, I am. I just think part of the reason why, I expect this game to be that the Chiefs to cover is that I do think the Chiefs will approach it like they typically would a game in which we got to go out there and play our best.
And you know, Beards was asking me if I was going to, you know, what fight I was going to start between the two of you today.
Sure,
and
good.
He did not expect me to come in hangry. And ready to fight both of you and just take you on.
Love it.
Let me reduce.
But I will say this: if the Chiefs lose, it's both of your faults.
That's fine. I accept that. Here's if I reduce my angle on it down, it is not that this is a game that they should hold all their good plays from and not worry about. This is a game where, with what I have seen from the Colts through these 2 weeks, which is still a very small sample size, slurp, and with what I know the Chiefs to be, this is not a sleepwalk through it game. This is a I expect the Chiefs to go and snuff a team out type of week. Not because the Colts won't put up a fight, but because that's what the Chiefs need to be and have historically been with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Not that they couldn't stub their toe on this one, but the last time they played the Colts and it was a really unpleasant experience, Patrick Mahomes had one ankle. You know, like that was an outlier in that specific frame.
And oh boy, was that game fun.
And boy, was it not.
God, that game was awful.
I would be very concerned to find out that this is the week that the Colts couldn't get right against the Texans or the Jags, and they do get right against the Chiefs. That would be a little bit alarming to me, even as I do think the health, depending on how much these guys play and if they do actually all end up back out there, that is an instance where the team is fundamentally different from weeks 1 and 2. So I absolutely would give you that. I just think the Chiefs need to show that they're a better football team here by some order of magnitude.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, if the Chiefs last week had played the Chargers, and I'll even just say it's the Jaguars, because Chargers and the Jaguars aren't the same to me. But let's say it was the Jags, and they go in there without Juju, without Marquez Valdez-Scantling, sure, without Nick Bolton. And really, I would start with and say no Orlando Brown, because that's the left tackle situation for the Colts is pretty much that situation right now.
They don't have one.
Would you feel good about that game?
No. I would expect them to still win that game because they are the Chiefs.
But it wouldn't surprise you if they lost it with that many guys.
It would floor me if they lost it 20-0. Like it would be.
It was 24-0.
Whatever it was. It, I mean,
things happen.
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet. I wouldn't be more surprised than I would be.
Movie. That's a movie that's going to be on your list, Josh.
After a 24-0 loss.
I just thought
to
his wife was sick of him walking around so much.
I'm making a list of movies for Joshua, and I'm asking him to make me a list of movies to understand his generation.
So we're creating a cultural exchange program.
That's right.
And I've just now realized when you mentioned that, there's going to be a large number of Chevy Chase movies on this list.
Right. Okay. Yeah, right. It's got to be, right? Because he didn't get the John Cocteau.
Because for a guy whose career fell off so badly.
He was great in Community until he became impossible to work with, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, Community.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the bounce back from a rough 20 years. But
it was,
so we've got into a lot about what we think.
Late game deep shot.
No, I won't make you watch Funny Farm. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. But it's not one to where, hey, you'd better watch Funny Farm. No.
You guys and Mick just need to get your heads together and figure out. I need like an order. And then I'm going to have to be able to give you guys homework back. That's what Matt has offered that is opening me up to this experience. Is I need to
homework.
A good portion of mine are going to be kid friendly. Jason, you can little man could watch Fantastic Mr. Fox. There's nothing wrong with that.
Great, that's sounds good.
I'm expecting a lot of Pixar movies. And is there a movie version of Kirby the video game or something?
Can I, instead of reading the book,
is there an Animal Crossing movie?
Can I just watch Grapes of Wrath instead of having to read the book for the book report? Can I just watch the movie? Why would I want to take 2 weeks and read it when I can just spend 2 hours and watch the movie? Work smarter, not harder. So
sounds like a reference to a movie I haven't seen.
No, that's just really like, if you're doing a book report on Grapes of Wrath, like, why wouldn't I just watch the movie?
Sometimes you go into movie reference voice, and I'm trying to figure out when you're in that mode and when you're out of that mode.
Sometimes that's just me going into a mode of just being like, that seems ridiculous. So we talk about the bigger picture of this game coming up this weekend, but let's hone in on some other aspects of this team. The big storyline this week, no Willie Gay. He is out for 4 weeks. Chiefs had a little bit of a heads up. Andy Reid said they expected to be right around this time that he would be suspended for the 4 weeks. From your perspective, just at Chiefs, maybe not specifically with the Colts, because we've talked about that, but this defense now, 4 weeks without Willie Gay, what are they missing, and how do they have to go about it with Spagnuolo to try to figure out how to fill that role?
Yeah, it's a challenge because, Willie Gay has started to look a little bit like that eraser that you need your weak side linebacker to be. The only really quibble I could have with Willie Gay over the first couple of weeks is that he tried to make a couple of big impact plays that forces a fumble and a turnover and just tries to hit stick somebody and misses the tackle. But other than that, he was fantastic.
The criticism for Willie Gay is he was running too fast after Austin Ekeler. he didn't break down quick enough. He was too full head of steam to get there and tackle him.
The swing and the whiff.
Yeah, that's right. Twice.
But by and large, one of the reasons why you haven't seen the Chiefs giving up a bunch of big chunk plays in key parts of the game has been that, the second level of that defense has been playing very well. And Willie Gay has been a big part of that. Because he's responsible for a large swath of the field, and he has played very well in that role. So, this defense was built this season to be faster than it is in the past. And with Willie Gay in there, and even with Darius Harris, I think there's some great upside. He's a good kid, smart player, all of that. He's not as fast as Willie Gay. So this defense gets slower when Willie Gay is not out there.
So you were, I'm not going to say championing Darius Harris. It was just we were talking about guys that may or may not make the team, and you're like, yeah, Darius Harris is on this team, guys. Like, this is not a matter of, like, Carter is on and Elijah Lee's on and Chanel's on and they're moving on from Darius Harris. Harris is on this team. So it didn't mean like you were saying Harris is on this team because he's amazing, but you are somebody that watched the training camp every single practice, and there's a reason why you said, guys, Darius Harris is absolutely on this team.
Yeah, it was very clear from training camp that he was the number two Mike. The Chiefs obviously drafted Leo Chanel with the possibility that he can back up Nick Bolton at some point, but that's not you don't want a rookie playing your Mike and calling your defense in week three of the season. So there was a reason why Darius Harris was going to be that guy, and on top of that, he's very versatile. You could plug him in at all three positions. He's been around long enough now in this defense. This is year four for him. That the rookie season, that he didn't play was that red shirt homework year. So he was learning that year even. And I think Spags and maybe Brendan Daly mentioned it yesterday. This is a guy with a high football IQ. He's picked up a lot. So, yeah, this is, Darius Harris is a guy that they feel comfortable with playing any of those positions. They feel comfortable with him calling the defenses if he needed to. hey, he's not the fastest guy, but I think he's got some good instincts, and let's see what he can do in a period of time. I mean, is he going to be as good as Willie Gay? Probably not. But can he be solid? I mean, I think there's reasonable optimism there for the Chiefs.
Does it change your thoughts on the draft a little bit when in the third round the Chiefs take Leo Chanel, and it was a, we can't believe this guy was there. That was a guy you can't pass up on. We go best player available. It just happened to be a spot to where we've got a couple of guys we believe in Nick Bolton and Willie Gay. Is that still fully 100%, or is part of the, well, Chanel's here on the board, and we may not have Willie Gay for a good portion of the season if he's out six games, that maybe we have somebody who's really good downhill blitzing and who's fast from that aspect and at least can help us in the Willie Gay role when he's not there, but also with somebody we think is really good too. That it's not like we're just going to take somebody for six games in the third round. No, you're going to be happy if you get that guy because maybe you didn't think he was there, but it might have been six in one hand, half dozen in the other. Well, we're going to lean towards this way because we are going to miss Willie Gay for a number of weeks. Does it change that perspective at all? Or?
It doesn't. And here's one reason why. They don't play the same position. So Leo Chanel's not replacing Willie Gay. He's not going to be out there. And that's not saying that Leo Chanel might not play more with Willie Gay not being out there, because the Chiefs, against the Colts in particular, might be playing more 4-3 base. So maybe you have your strong side guy out there. I mean, typically that's the guy that comes off in the sub packages. So if you got a corner or a safety, they're going to be coming in on that tight end side. So that, to me, is, you know, part of the distinction right there. And I can definitely say there was a larger, you know, long-term picture with taking Chanel, which was not only did the Chiefs think that he was the best player at that spot, that he was downhill, that he could do a lot of things for them, but they did view him as, okay, you know what, we don't have a backup behind Nick Bolton. We got Darius Harris for 1 year, then we don't know. We don't have any control after that. What's next? Well, they needed a backup Mike, so they feel like that he could do that too. So there was a lot more, I think, long-term than short-term.
I agree with that. I think that is the larger picture, but it may not be apples and apples in terms of position, but the two players on the Chiefs that have blitzed the most times is Willie Gay and L'Jarius Sneed. And what's the one thing people talked about with Leo Chanel was, man, he is awesome on the blitz. He can go and get after the quarterback. So it may not be he's out on the field and he's specifically playing Will, and that's not necessarily where he plays, but Nick Bolton and Willie Gay on a particular scheme or play call from Spags might be, well, Willie Gay's blitzing on this particular play. It's not to then give away tendencies, right? Or just be like, well, when Chanel's in the game and it's he and Nick Bolton on the field, it's going to be a blitz. But if you are looking for a specific type of exotic blitz from a linebacker, that's really what, from a very specific role of the fact that Willie Gay has blitzed the most times of the defenders, that is something Chanel excels at. That if he's on the field, it could be where Spagnuolo goes, well, I can still run this exotic blitz that Willie Gay would do because that's a strength of Chanel.
Yeah, and I think that's probably more the number at this point. It's probably more of an indication of just how many times that those guys are on the field because, right, you know, Willie Gay and L'Jarius Sneed, I mean, especially Sneed from the slot, those are the two most logical positions that you're going to be blitzing from. Gay's been on the field a lot more than Chanel has, so I haven't looked at the percentages. I would guess maybe there's probably a chance. I mean, maybe Chanel has a higher rush percentage. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it, but... And I also think that's going to grow. I mean, I think that, you know,
yeah, because the blitz percentage is actually down in the first two games of what we've seen from Spagnuolo this time.
I mean, I expect that you're going to see them using Chanel more and more in those positions once he gets more comfortable, and especially being able to make the read. So there's going to be a spot where, you know, sometimes you may be called on the blitz, but depending on the look that you get, you can't. You've got to be the one that drops back. Chanel, maybe they're just not comfortable with him handling that spot yet.
So what is the overall defensive impact there? Because even like talking about exotic blitzes, one of the things I think of is Willie Gay having the option to have a quarterback asking where he's going to be. You know, if all True. Of a sudden that's Leo Chanel right there, you might say, okay, well, so this guy's either coming straight towards me or his feet are going to be pretty close to where he's starting.
He's
from.
Lining up in the A gap. I know where he's going to
be. I bet he's probably not backpedaling. I'll tell you what, if he is backpedaling and going to cover running back or something, I'm just going to go ahead and throw the ball at running back as soon as possible.
Yep, what you do.
And Willie Gay was able, especially, I mean, these first two games, to kind of make offenses guess where he was going to be. So, you know, knowing that it's going to be a lot of Darius Harris probably and it's going to impact things, what is the holistic impact on the defense? Like, does it get more one-dimensional? Do they have to overcompensate somewhere?
I don't think they really have to. I mean, the only thing that you're really, to me, missing with a downgrade, and I even hate to use that word, but, you know, with Harris in there instead of Gay.
Reality.
The only thing you're really missing is speed. I mean, I think from, especially, honestly, I mean, if you're talking about exotic blitzes, Jarius Harris is probably in a better spot to handle some of that, because I think that because of his experience, because of, you know, his high football IQ, that they do trust him to handle things. I think there's more they're willing to put on Jarius Harris's plate than maybe a Willie Gay, even though Gay is definitely the more complete player.
Visiting with Matt Derrick, he is hanging out with us on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll continue rolling with Matt. Look, if all he's missing is speed, maybe reach out to Jesse Spano.
The other thing he might be missing is breakfast casserole. So.
Yeah, that's true. But don't just gloss over my speed joke, okay? Don't just gloss over my Jesse Spano speed joke, if that's what he needs.
I'm just going to try to be Mike Burton to Matt's Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I actually didn't get this one.
Oh, Saved by the Bell!
Oh, no, that's not going to be on the list.
When Jesse was addicted to speed?
Yeah.
And then Zach got her off addiction by just shaking her?
Got her off of what?
Addiction of speed. Got her off of speed by just shaking her. Yeah, go watch the episode, okay? That's how he stepped up, and he worried about a friend. Jesse was in trouble. She was so concerned about her grades that all she was doing was studying. And she's so excited. I'm so scared. And then Zach Morris grabs her, shakes her, and then boom, she's no longer addicted anymore.
What was that from?
Saved by the Bell.
Oh, she'd get saved by a break.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
That's a clown take, bro.
On Sports Radio 810.
All right, hanging out with Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. We'll talk with Kendall Gammon coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer will hang out with us, and we'll hear from the Chiefs at 1 o'clock or so, and we've got the cuts as well. So the defense through the first two games, we've talked about the impact of no Willie Gay, and it's surprising to me, and I mean, we didn't get a chance to talk last Friday about the Cardinals game, post-game, what happened, because we were talking so much about the Chargers. But on Monday, before the Chargers game, we had talked about, you know, what we saw in the Cardinals game, and it was like, well, I don't know that they, you know, got pressure on Murray the way that I would like to see him get pressure. And then I rewatched the condensed game, and I'm like, actually, I was kind of did a pretty damn good job when I'm just simply focusing on those things. I know the result, right? I'm just simply watching the play and seeing how things happen. And so I was impressed by that. I thought they got some pressure on Herbert, especially late in the game. They were getting after him. But it's still surprising to see that they're third in the league in pressure percentage, in pressure rate. And it's early. But if we said the one thing the Chiefs had to improve on was sacking the quarterback, certainly. But it wasn't just sacking. It was who's even going to pressure the quarterback, okay? Is it going to be Melvin Ingram? That's who you're relying on. You didn't get any of the big names. They went somewhere else around the AFC. And Frank Clark, you kept him around just because monetarily it made more sense just to pay him $1 million to have him around. A guy like that paying $1 million against the cap, essentially, from what you would have to take a dead cap hit on. But they're also fifth in the NFL in rush percentage in just bringing four, which is different than what we had seen when it's like, okay, for Spagnuolo to get there, he's going to have to blitz because it's front four. So is that a product of maybe a couple of specific types of offenses, or is it just that, you know what, this Chiefs defensive front through two games looks like it, but could be maybe not just better, but maybe much better than what maybe expectations might have been for their ability to get after the quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, to me, at least the hurry percentage that you're seeing and the total numbers that are putting up, that's to me is a better indication that it's sacks at this point. Because, I mean, just two games in, I mean, 2.5 sacks, okay, per game. If they picked up one more sack and they were averaging 3 per game, we'd be having a different conversation. I mean, that's just how close it is at this time of year, those percentages. I mean, that's where you go from being middle of the pack to
having 51 sacks,
one of the top 5 teams in the league. Yeah. So that's how close it is. But the percentage and the fact that they are getting pressure, and especially to me with a couple of quarterbacks that are honestly kind of hard to get down. I mean, Kyler Murray is definitely hard to get down. And And the Chiefs did exactly what they wanted to do against him, which was contain him. It wasn't about rushing him. It wasn't about, you know, blitzing him, because that's another one of those guys that you do that, and sometimes, like Mahomes, it can backfire. They wanted to make sure that they kept him in where they wanted him to be, and they did a great job of that. And Herbert's a guy that, you know, hey, he's going to get rid of the ball quickly if he needs to. He's going to try to avoid sacks, yet they still got pressure on him. They still got some meaningful hits. That sequence there during the goal line where you had Karloftis, who got in his face and shoved, you know, Herbert down to the ground on first down, and then Jones gets the sack and the big play. I mean, that to me, that's right there telling me enough about this team that, you know, the sacks should come. That was the problem last year. They got the hurries and the sacks didn't come. This year, let's see what happens. I'm willing to take a wait and see, because I think I've seen enough so far to think that it's going to happen.
Well, I've said I think this is a week where the sacks should equal the pressure percentage, because Matt Ryan ain't going anywhere.
No, well, there's one element that we have actually glossed over all week, because I just kind of thought eventually he'd be back. Mike Dana seems like an outside shot to play in this game.
It seems
like also he had one of the best starts to this season relative of expectations or where he was coming from. Like he was playing some really good football, and I had to make sure I rephrased this correctly yesterday, because I don't want to be too definitive about it. So I will say I have noticed Mike Dana more than I have noticed Frank Clark this year on the field. And I am legitimately kind of worried about what that is all going to look like if Dana can't go. Am I overrating what Dana's done?
No.
What have you seen from him?
You're not. And to me, I thought the most glossed over thing I heard yesterday from the press conferences was Steve Spagnuolo talking about the fact that to him, they're down three starters right now from week one. They're down Willie Gay. They're down Trent McDuffie. And now they don't have Mike Dana. So, no, I don't think you are underestimating that. He has been very productive. And again, I mean, that's been part of the Chiefs' plan, is that they want to be able to rotate those guys. They feel that they've got a core group that they can use. They don't need to be leaving anybody out there for 80% of the snaps and running them into the ground so that by December and January, there's nothing left in the tank. They've been able to have a good rotation, and keeping those guys fresh during a game is going to help you deeper into a game, keep the pressure up. So, yeah, I mean, they've obviously replenished. You know, they brought in the guy from the Rams, and obviously they have some depth there, because they haven't been tapped into Malik Herring and Joshua Kando yet.
That's what I was going to ask, if you think that one of those guys is more likely to get pulled onto the field first, because they both made the active roster and then haven't been active yet.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like one of those would have to be the natural decision there. I mean, they've been here, they know the defense, they know what's going on. Whitley at this point would just be somebody you're just going out there and saying, go after the quarterback. I mean, you're not doing anything exotic with him.
Dana is third on the team in pressures with 8, so he's got the third most.
Good number, yeah.
So I was surprised to see this.
Who's second?
Well, that's what I'm going to get into.
Okay, cool. Uh-oh. Chris Jones is one?
Chris Jones is one with 12.
I was afraid he was going to tell us Chris Jones was 2 and there was somebody else who was 1.
Yeah. No,
we're going to blow our minds.
No, it's early, and the sacks aren't backing up what is the numbers in terms of pressuring. But do you know who's number one in the NFL of all rookies in pressures?
Hold on.
Think of it.
Aiden Hutchinson.
That is correct.
Oh, is it actually? Yeah. I thought you were setting me up for failure.
You know who he's tied with?
That was amazing.
Jermaine Johnson?
No.
No, that's got to be. I can't believe it's not that.
Right? It's not Walker either.
Walker from Georgia. He went first. He went ahead of
Aiden
Hutchinson. That's crazy. Well, it's got to be one of those. Who is the other? Was another big. Owe, obvious. Or not Owe.
Snuffleupagus?
No, that's a Muppet.
Furious Jorge. Is Aiden Hutchinson.
Oh, George Karloftis!
And George Karloftis both have 9 pressures. The difference is Aiden Hutchinson has 3 sacks to go with his 9 pressures. Karloftis does not. But if you're talking about pressures, and this is kind of getting into what we've discussed the last 2 years, is why can't they sack the quarterback with pressures? Hopefully Karloftis is different. 2 games, he's pressuring but not sacking. But in theory, the pressures should lead to more sacks. But Aiden Hutchinson has 3 sacks. Karloftis has 0, but of all rookies, they are tied atop the league with 9 pressures. Karloftis is also 15th in the league in pressures of all NFL players on defense. Chris Jones is 3rd with his 12 pressures, and you've seen that, and he's got 2 sacks. So his pressures have, one of them was a gimme, but another one was a dominant play and a big moment in the game that helped change some things. So I'm thinking that while Karloftis doesn't have a number next to his name with the sack, it's only a matter of time, right?
Yeah,
and I don't think it's only a matter of time because he's talented and sacks happen. It's only a matter of time because the same pressure rate that he's putting on quarterbacks that other players are, they have at least two sacks already this year.
Yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, and that was my feeling all along. I mean, is that there's going to be some sacks that Karloftis runs into because of his effort and, you know, tenacity. I mean, he's going to get some, you know, probably that Chris Jones one against, well, the first one that Chris Jones had against the Chargers, what, you know, the cheap sack. I hate to call it. Once
when
again,
he slid down and
once again, first one I hate too. But
first,
you know,
one to touch him gets
the
sack.
A freebie, but Karloftis is going to run into a couple of those. But he's going to run into a couple where he just, I think, absolutely manhandles somebody and body slams them. So
I'm going to give you some more homework, Jason.
Okay. Oh no.
I need you to invent this stat for me.
Okay.
I've already got you the acronym. This is going to be QB adjacent. Okay. Because I want you to get the credit because you're going to have to do the legwork on this. So that's going to be quarterback adjusted aggregate sack or impact. Now, it's not impact. It's impact because I needed an N for Jason. But I wonder how much the quarterbacks impact what it is that you've been talking about for 2 years now. Because I am really wondering, is it easier to just, is it simply the Chiefs have played a lot of good mobile quarterbacks in their division or in big games, or it's just harder to bring down? Have they gotten a lot of pressure on Josh Allen, never been able to tackle him? Or are they going to pressure Matt Ryan and not bring him down? Because I keep wondering how much the opponent impacts this and how much of it is a Chiefs defense problem. And I have no way of measuring that, so I need you to do it.
But
you like math more than I do.
But I'm just not good at it.
That's never stopped anybody from coming up with a stat.
That's right. But there has to be an element, Matt, because you would certainly, I'd want to pick your brain at this. There has to be an element of, you know, Spags is coming after you and he's coming different ways. That is there an element of opposing offenses going, well, we're not taking 5 and 7 step drops. We got to get rid of the ball quickly. So like the blitz may work and pressure the quarterback, but the offensive scheme is to get the ball out quickly, throw it underneath, throw it to the running back if need be, screen pass if you've got to go that route. You got a one-on-one, just take your three-step drop and fire it over there to the one-on-one and give somebody a chance. That is that part of the reason as to why, yeah, they're pressuring, they're getting there, because Spags is, blitzes and maybe stunts are working to a degree, but offenses are just simply getting rid of the ball quicker because they also know that that's what Spagnuolo's defense is going to do.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that, you know, and I was thinking about this earlier today. I actually wanted to weigh in when you guys were talking about some things. And to me, it's very difficult to me to isolate some statistics. And I feel like there's some statistics, especially some, this is going to really, really activate Josh. There's some advanced analytics that I feel like that are, they're not exactly predictive to me. I mean, they measure something, and I get that. But, you know, I'm not expressing this well, and I guess I'm still hungry.
You haven't digested yet. So far, I'm ready. I am in, like, you're ready to freak out mode. But I was waiting for you to say something that I even slightly disagreed with, and so far you're good.
So, and yeah, I wasn't going to completely bash analytics or anything, but I don't know that we just have some good measurements for some of these things because, you know, against the Chiefs, we know teams are going to do things out of character for them because they expect that they go into a game against the Chiefs. They know they're not going to win with 17 points. They go in with the expectation, you know, if we win this game, we might need to have 38. And it means that they're going to do different things. And maybe that means that they're going to throw the ball more often. Maybe they're going to get rid of the ball more quickly. Maybe there's things that they're going to try to do to avoid negative plays or turnovers because they know that that alone can just kill them. I don't know. I mean, it's... And I'd be interested to see, I mean, because Josh made me think about this, you know, I wonder what the Chiefs look like as far as maybe looking back at the last couple of years and seeing what kind of quarterbacks do they do better against versus average and bringing them down. And maybe who do they struggle with? And maybe some of it is just simply like, you know, Josh said, Steve Spagnuolo may just have a different approach than a lot of other teams do against the scrambling mobile quarterbacks because – I there may be some teams that just pile up some sacks against these guys because they go after them and are a little more aggressive, whereas Spags really is willing to let these guys work in the pocket and do some things and maybe not pressure them as much or at least not, you know, go after them as aggressively because he wants to keep them in the pocket, force them to throw the football because they're good at running, and that's the last thing he wants them to do.
So It's about 10 different things that I really would like to get into.
I think you had a little bit of a pause, and then I was like, I'll just jump in. It's still quiet. And then I realized that Beards had been holding down the talk back button. So I don't think anyone heard what you said either, Jason. Go ahead.
Well, just real quick, and then we'll take a break. But so short yardage has been a theme this week. And,
yeah.
And short yardage situations for the Chiefs not being able to come through. Maurice Jones-Drew at NFL.com put out his, you know, he does the top 15 running backs each week, you know, the best running backs in the league. They go up and down as they're playing. And reading that, I just clicked on it just to see where he had guys ranked. But the sort of preamble that's there before he gets into his ranking was interesting in him saying, where has the short yardage goal line offense gone in the NFL?
Hmm.
And he said there was one time in his career that from 2 yards in, that he did not score when he touched the ball. And he still remembers it to this day when he got stopped. And he said that was a point of pride. And he pointed out that teams so far this year on fourth and goal from 2 yards and in are 4 of 10. Those four successes were Derrick Henry Monday night, Nick Chubb last night, Jimmy G and Jalen Hurts. So two of eight.
Four greatest power runners of our time.
2 of 8 when the running back gets the ball on fourth and goal from 2 yards and in. And he said overall goal to go situations within 2 yards, running plays are 18 of 41 in converting for a touchdown. Passing plays are 15 of 29. They're almost the same amount of conversions with 12 fewer attempts. And his point was, what's happening to punch somebody in the mouth down on the goal line and just simply score? We're not seeing it. Now, there's been 2 turnovers when the running back has had the ball. Bet you can remember which 2 turnovers those were with the Denver Broncos. But I thought it was because we focused so much on the Chiefs that I didn't go through and look at all other teams and goal-to-go situations from 2 yards
That's
and in.
That's a fair point.
And MJD saying, no, no, where have the offenses gone in general from this standpoint? Because the Chiefs' 4 plays within 2 yards or closer were Fortz and touchdown, Hardman touchdown, Fortz and incompletion, Kelsey screen, shovel pass. Those are the 4 times they've had a goal to go within 2 yards. They're 2 for 2, or they're 2 for 4. 4 passes! 4 for 4 on calling a pass play for the Chiefs in that situation. And that's kind of what MJD is saying, is that it's just not the same as it used to be, and maybe teams just don't focus on that anymore.
It's not, it's not the same, and you know, like what I was trying to get out of Eric Bieniemy, and I probably did a very bad job of it yesterday. You know, the Chiefs are not alone in this, but even in, you know, middle of the field situations, the Chiefs sometimes look for the big play on third down and short rather than just moving the chains. I mean, the Mecole Hardman jet sweep was not designed for 1 yard. That was designed to be a chunk play. You know, and sometimes you bypass the fullback dive for the jet sweep, and there's got to, I mean, there's an art to deciding about when you're going to choose to just move the chains versus when you think you can get a chunk play on a defense.
Yeah. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll get Matt's thoughts and prediction on the Colts and Chiefs coming up next.
You're in the zone.
Take care of y'all bodies. You know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken. You feel me? They'll take care of y'all mentals.
With Jason Anderson.
You start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken, and you'll be able to do what you want to do.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll talk with Kendall Gammon coming up on the other side of the break. Get his thoughts on the Chiefs this weekend of football as well. Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. All right, Matt. 5.5-point favorites are the Chiefs. They're in Indianapolis Sunday at noon. What do you think happens, and if you have a score in mind?
This isn't exactly a trap game for the Chiefs, but it might feel like one because the Colts are not exactly a sleeping giant, but they're better than their record indicates that they are. They're getting healthy at the right time. To me, the biggest question with the Colts is going to be if they can establish the run and whether or not Matt Ryan can protect the football. That has been a problem for them. The Chiefs are still the better team. And I still trust in September Patrick Mahomes. I still trust in Andy Reid's September game plans. They should prevail in this game. It would not surprise me if the Colts made it scary, but I'm still going with the Chiefs 31-17.
31-17 and covering as well. The turnovers is an interesting aspect. If Shaq Leonard plays, he's one of the best at forcing fumbles. That's an equalizer. And we saw that last year with
one
the Chiefs.
One play can change things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he is... I mean, Juju against the Cardinals, I mean, that ball was punched out. That's what Shaq Leonard does. He's one of the best at being able to do that. And by the way, the Colts have a number of players that are really good. They clearly taught in getting the football out. You know, fumble here, there, put the ball on the ground, all of a sudden things can change. So the turnovers thing is concerning just because that's kind of what they focus on and try to get to. But 31-17, I like that. As long as
I wouldn't bet this game. I have no faith in that. But
I took out a second mortgage and took the Chiefs minus 5.5. That's just me.
Currently, Matt Derrick actually legally owns my house.
I always say, only bet the amount of money you're willing to win. Matt, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir. Kendall Gambin coming up next.